Today's program is brought to you by the Dairy Farm Families of Wisconsin, the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board. Did you know that today Wisconsin produces more than 600 varieties, types, and styles of American, international style, and original cheese that win more awards than any other state or country? To learn more, visit eatwisconsincheese.com.
I'm Linda Palaccio, host of A Taste of the Past. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good morning. You're listening to In the Drink on heritageradionetwork.org. I'm your host, Joe Campanelli, and when I'm not hosting this radio show, which I love to do every week, you can find me at one of our restaurants at Dell'Anima, Anfora, Lartuzzi, or La Picho. And if you'd like more of In the Drink, you can tune in every Wednesday at 10 a.m. to hear the latest new episode live on heritageradionetwork.org. And you can also listen to all of our previous episodes there. And if you want it to be weekly uploaded, you can also check into iTunes. I want to thank, as always, Jory Morales and Jack Inslee, who bring this radio show together, put it together every week. We wouldn't be here without them. And the whole team at Heritage, these guys are just fantastic. Today, we have a great episode for you. Today, we have a producer of one of my favorite wines you can find at all of our restaurants. It's something we actually did really well with By the Glass at Altalinea over the summer. We have Ivan Rapuzzi from Ronchi di Chala in the studio. Welcome to In the Drink.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I also wanted to thank Nicole Heyman from Soil Air Selections, a great partner. We love to buy wine from Soil Air. They have fantastic other producers, such as Odero and so many others. Thank you. Thank you, Nicole.
Thank you.
You're in the studio. You don't have to chime in if you don't want to.
All right, thank you.
Yvonne, it is, before we get started, I'd really love to send our sincerest condolences for, I know your father passed away last year. He was an icon in the industry for people who love real Italian wine, and the work that your parents did in terms of bringing indigenous Friulian grapes made in an organic and loving way to so many people is can't be understated. So I wanted to send that to you. But here we're here to talk about the great work that you're doing. Something that we were talking about before the show got started that I have not heard about is a new biodiversity certification that you're one of the very first growers in Italy to obtain. Can you tell us more about this biodiversity certification?
Sure, sure. It is a very important certification, but I want to tell you that Ronchi di Chala is really a traditional producer. Mm-hmm. But we have had always our eyes also on some innovation. In fact, when my parents start, they want to make wines as in the past, as traditional as possible. But in that times, that was something new, because people works in completely different way, using only international varieties. You know, in Friuli, nearly all the vines was with Merlot, Pinot Grigio in that time.
And this was in the 1970s.
In the 70s, mm-hmm. Yes. Because in Friuli we had a beautiful history in the past, and probably the dark age for Friulan wine was between the beginning of the 20th century till 1970-1978.
Okay. Yeah. And does that have to do with increased international varieties and, I imagine, machinery in the vineyards, right, and also chemicals, agrochemicals?
Exactly. It also changing the way to grow the vine. For example, we have our traditional way to grow the wine. The name is Cappuccina Browning. And in that time, people use completely different ways and change everything. This was a problem. And my parents want to come back to the origin.
Yeah.
And it's funny because that was as an innovation in that time.
Why were people changing the ways of pruning? Was it for higher yields or for to allow for machinery to harvest?
Probably for different reasons.
Mm-hmm.
One was for sure to have a cheaper production and low costs, but also because, I'm sorry about that, but in my region many people didn't trust in himself and in the terroir.
Okay. And so they brought back these old ways of pruning and old ways of treating the vines.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Other thing, my parents start only with indigenous varieties. And that was absolutely like a revolution in Italy. And in that time, they were supported by some very famous journalists for that time, Luigi Veronelli, probably you know, Mario Soldati, Gianni Brera. Was like a resurrection of the food and the wine for Italy in that time. And my father, my mother in that time was some actors in that process. And now with the biodiversity certification is exactly on the same way for us because we trust very much in our terroir and we want to preserve and keep as well as possible our vines because we are not just a farmer, but noi custodiamo in Italian our piece of land. And we want to preserve in the best way as possible.
Yeah.
And that certification is something different from organic or biological certification, because organic certification is just as a protocol, more or less. You can use some products, you can use others. But, for example, you can use a lot of copper sulfate. But, you know, copper especially is a poison for the soil.
This is something that I hear a lot from both organic growers and non-organic growers who think that copper is really bad because you're allowed to use it in both organic and even biodynamic certified wines,
mm-hmm.
but the copper never leaves the soil, right? It's a heavy metal, and it's every year when you put more copper, you have an increased amount of copper in your soil.
And it is a poison for the soil, and many species of animal, of insects living in the soil died after some year. And, mm-hmm. and it is a big problem because everything is connected in our world.
So what do you do that would take the place of copper?
Well, there are some... The first important thing is try to have more balance and more equilibrium in the vine,
mm-hmm.
and have some natural resistance against the problems, the fungi, for example, Peronospora or Oidio. So it was very important, for example, don't using fertilization. Seems strange, but it's like that. Because the leaves are more strong and has more resistance against that problems. And then there are some new organic molecula, for example, that, of course, we use instead the copper sulfate. And these molecula are more are less impact. Because after spray on the vines, after 3 or 4 hours, they completely disappeared thanks to the light, thanks to the temperature, to mm-hmm. the air.
So you add these organic treatments against mildew and mold funguses, as you said. And unlike copper, which will stay forever, this just disappears. It treats the mildew and then it's gone.
Yeah,
this is great.
Copper at least 1 or 2 time a year, no more, in my opinion. After that, with that certification, is very important, for example, to have minimum 30% of the property covered by forest. because during the fermentation we produce a CO2 that you know is a gas, can create some problems in the environment, and 30% of forest of trees can use this CO2 that we produce. In Challa, actually, we have more than 90% of the surface covered by forest in our valley.
Wow, that's very surprising to me, and something that you don't hear many people talk about, and that's the environmental impact of fermentation. Obviously, it releases CO2, but for some reason, in my small mind, I didn't put it together that this was a harmful CO2 the way that, you know, maybe burning gasoline would be harmful carbon dioxide. And so you're saying that having 30% of your vineyard site, of your total land, be forest minimum will equalize the amount of carbon that you put into the atmosphere during fermentation. But you have much more than that. You have 90%.
90% about. And this is very important also for our strategy, for example, against insects. Mm-hmm. We don't use nothing against insects because the parasite of the vines are also the same parasite living in the forest. But in the forest live together the predators. And there are a balancement between parasite and predators. And so in the vines, we have the same situation.
Wow. I think, you know, this is so interesting and a topic that I don't hear many winemakers talk about. And I think that a lot of people don't realize is so important. I think that certainly as Americans, if we look at a vineyard and it's a vineyard on a hill and it's one perfect vine after another, nothing in between, another perfect vine after another, they say, wow, that's beautiful. But what's actually happening there is that each of those vines is just depleting the soil, and then you have to fertilize it, and it's this constant depletion, fertilization. But is it true to say that if you have a lot of growth and biodiversity in the soil, then you don't need to do that same sort of, you know, fertilization?
Yes, we understand that it's really better to have small vines surrounded by natural environment.
Yeah, because you can't do a crop rotation with a vine. So I know on a farm, you might plant 1 year, I don't know, maybe you plant squash.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next year you'll plant beans, and then the next year you'll plant tomatoes, so that every year it's adding something to the soil and it's taking something away from the soil and adding. But the vine stays there, hopefully 50, 60, 70 years.
Yeah.
So it's important to have other things growing around and in between it.
Yeah. In fact, we want to have as much as possible the same biodiversity in our vines than in the forest, mm-hmm. for example.
And do you do anything to encourage that? Do you specifically plant things between the rows, or do you just allow it to naturally grow?
Naturally grow, definitely.
Okay.
From the trees and from also the grass. We don't use any kind of selected seeds for growing grass in the vine, only the natural ones.
Only the natural. And then what eventual effect do you think this has on the taste of the wine and how the wines act?
Yeah, it is very important, and in my opinion, it is one of the most important things. Because, you know, the wine is a product of fermentation of the grape. And when a vine grow in a good environment condition, without poison, in perfect balancement with the environment, give you grapes with more balanced and with more personality, mm-hmm. in my opinion.
It makes complete sense to me, actually. And it seems to me that the measure of the biodiversity, and I'd love to know how you, like, what are ways that you can measure it, but the more biodiversity you have is really a measurement of how healthy your vineyard is.
Yes.
Of how well you're doing to take care of the land.
Yes, it is.
And how do you measure it? What can you say we have 10,000 flying insects in this one area, or the soil has this much microbial activity? What are the ways to measure the biodiversity?
First, the measure is not to have too much in terms of biomass, but in terms of biodiversity. For example, is more important to have many different species living together, and this is an equilibrium one between the other. Not to when one species become too much, that means that something doesn't work.
That everything is not playing nicely together.
Yes, it is.
That makes a lot of sense as well. Well, that being said, this is, for me, a completely mind-blowing conversation on biodiversity, and I think that more producers who claim to be organic or who claim to be good stewards of their land should focus more on this conversation, because it really is the measure of how healthy your vineyard is and how much character your eventual wine has.
Well, I hope so, because in my opinion, we have to preserve our land, our world, and that's the way.
Okay, and that being said, we're going to take just a quick 1 minute break, and we'll be back with more with Ivan Rapuzzi from Ronchi di Chala on In the Drink.
Hey, this is Michael Harlan Turkel from The Food Scene on heritageradionetwork.org. You know, every Tuesday at 3 p.m., I stop in the studio, walk to the far side, sit in my favorite blue chair. If you ever stop by Roberta's, look through the window, and you can see that chair itself. You know, and I've been sitting here for 5-plus years, 250 episodes, have met some of the best people in the food world, such great culinary minds. And recently we just relaunched our website, added a whole bunch of shows, but we still need you, our listeners, our friends, our fans, even guests themselves, to help us out. We're 501c3, a nonprofit, and we're not really doing this for the money. We're doing this for the love, for the greater good of the food world as a whole. So get on heritageradionetwork.org, click that little pounding heart in the top right corner, and you know, give what you can, or just keep on listening. We'd love to have you.
All right. And we're back on In the Drink. Thanks for that message, Michael. We actually wouldn't be here on In the Drink if it wasn't for Michael Harlan Turkel and The Food Scene. I was a guest on his show 2.5 years ago and had such a great time that I was invited back to have our own little show here. But we're back in the studio with Ivan Rapuzzi from Ronchi di Chala. We had a fascinating discussion on biodiversity, but we haven't spoken too much about the actual winery and the place that you're in, a truly specific part of not only of Friuli, but tell us about the Chala area that you're in and what makes it so unique.
Yeah, Chala is a specific small valley. We are just near the border with Slovenia and not far the border with Austria. So we are 35 kilometers from the Adriatic Sea, so from the Mediterranean, basically, and 30 kilometers from the top of the Alps. So we are just in between. And Chala so has some specific characteristic. In fact, we have some freshness and from the Alps, but we have also some warmer and some Mediterranean influence in our area. In fact, in the valley, in the side where it's possible to grow the vines, grow all the species, the three species typical from the Mediterranean region. So we have oaks, cherries, we have olive tree, the vines, figs, everything in the sense. On the other side of the hill, we have more a Middle European condition, more continental. So we have fagus, you know, abies, completely different, betula that grow also in Siberia, for example, you know.
Beets.
So
it's
completely. What was that, beets?
Beets.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Nicole, for chiming in, because I did not know what betula was.
I know the Latin names of these three. Challa is also specific because the main valley of Friuli are oriented north to south. Challa is east to west, and we have two small streams. We have also some specific situation into the soil because we have basically marl, but with some limestone, because we are just in between this border between limestone and marl.
Do you have, is that considered the punka soil that you see in other parts of Friuli as well?
Yes, but together some calc, some karstic influence.
Okay. And in terms of the orientation of the vineyards being east-west, I know that a lot of Friuli vineyard sites are influenced by the Bora wind, which comes from up north. Does the east-west orientation affect the wind? Do you still get that wind influence?
Yes, we have a Bora wind, of course, but the valley is closed by a small mountain in the north, so it is a little bit preserved from too strong a wind.
Yeah. When your parents started the winery in 1970, how did they find, was this a piece of land that was in the family for a long time, or did they go to it and did they find it?
No, they bought the property.
What made them choose this particular property? Everything else was north-south oriented, and this was different from everything else.
Yeah, they look around for many different place, location, but when they arrived in Challa, they falling in love with the place. It was abandoned in the Second World War, so for about 35 years in that time, 30 years. But was something magic feeling between them. They wanted to start a new life in that place.
And I know that it's one of the few monopoles in Italy. I think there's only maybe three or four total monopoles in Italy. How was that attained? Is that something that you find to be important for your wines?
Well, it is important, especially for the consumer, in my opinion, because that guarantee to the consumer a higher quality of our wine, because it is a certification of our way to produce wine. For example, in the main DOC from Friuli, Collio or Collio Orientali, you can produce 11 tons per hectare of grapes. In Challa, you cannot exceed 6, so more or less half. We can release our red wines not before 5 years from the harvest. At least the regular DOC is 1 year, so it's completely different.
How was the process of applying for your own appellation? Because I imagine at some point it was part of the Collio DOC, and then you had to apply to be just Challa as the appellation. Was your family part of writing those rules?
Yes, the ministry, the agricultural ministry, in 1995 was the first year when the zonazione, to find some specific area, started as project of the ministry. And Challa was the perfect situation to do that. So, of course, with my parents, they have some discussion. And then this is a law of our state.
Great. And then to talk more specifically about the grapes, we said at the top of the show that you focus only on the indigenous or the native grapes of the area. From what everything I understand, it, your parents really are credited with saving the Schioppettino grape from near extinction.
Yeah.
Can you share with us what that process was like? And I love these stories. You hear them many times in Italy with an indigenous grape, whether it's Fiano or Timorasso in Piedmont or something like this. What is the unique story of Schioppettino and your parents?
Well, Schioppettino is probably was one of the most historical variety from Friuli. In fact, there are some documents from the Middle Age, from the 13th century, that spoke about that variety in Friuli. But historically, Schioppettino was cultivated in few kilometers in Cialla Valley, in few kilometers around Cialla Valley, and not in other place, because outside this small area gives a good wine, but with a different characteristics. And it lost, especially the spiciness, the peppery, some specific and unique characteristic that you can have only in Cialla. This was the lucky for Schioppettino, but also the unlucky of Schioppettino. Because, for example, when in 1855 arrived the phylloxera, all the Schioppettino vines was destroyed by that pest. And nobody has the time to preserve and to keep some vine. After phylloxera, we had the First and the Second World War, and we was on the front line in the area. 1,000 people die and nobody works in the vines for other 50 years about. So after all that big problems, Schioppettino was considered completely extinct, disappeared. In fact, it was not permitted, was not listed on the authorized variety because it was considered as extinct. When my parents bought the property in Cialla, they know Schioppettino only by old papers. But they wanted to try to find again the Schioppettino. And they worked for 2 years, and they was able to find 60 survived plants. Not all together, but one here, one there. And they take the pieces of food, make new plants. And after that, now it's possible, thanks to my parents, it's possible to drink again Schioppettino.
How were they able to identify these plants as Schioppettino? Did whoever was... Was anyone growing them and they knew that this was, they had 3 Schioppettino plants from back in the day?
Yeah, first exists a bibliography, some literature about the ampelographia. And so my parents have some picture of the plant, of the leaves, of the clusters, the berries, some specific characteristics. And the Schioppettino is so different from each other varieties that you cannot do any mistake in identification.
That is fascinating. So these very old drawings were able to help them identify the Schioppettino. And now how many hectares of Schioppettino are grown?
We have 8 hectares about.
And do you know in total in Friuli?
Is probably 30.
About 30.
Yeah.
So it's still a small grape in terms of how many hectares are grown. But for someone who loves Italian wine and loves wines from Friuli, it looms larger in my brain than 30 hectares. I think of it as more important as a more important grape. And one of the fascinating things that you guys do, you said that your reds are aged at least 5 years before release. I've always been fascinated by your white wines that can age for such an incredibly long time. Nicole has shared some from the 90s with me and my team that are just absolutely beautiful. Can you tell us about the aging of your white wines? Was that something that your parents had done, and how did that all come about?
Yes, it seems strange, but in Cialla, every wine can age very well. We have a piece of land that make such a miracle in some way. In fact, I'm sure that sometimes some vintage we did some mistakes. Of course, we are human, so we cannot do everything perfect. But the wines, every year, can live so long, every different vintage. And the white, exactly as the reds, It's the same thing. Probably because we have this combination between the freshness of the Alps and the warmer from the Mediterranean.
But the Cella Bianco was also produced in the past.
Yes.
Historically.
It is a wine produced in the Middle Age.
In the Middle Age. Yeah. Of that same grape variety blend. Yeah. And it's Ribolla Verduzzo Piccoli, is that
correct?
Okay. And that's so interesting, too, because we also think of Verduzzo and Piccoli being more dessert wine grapes.
Yeah.
But to make an age-worthy, dry, serious, complex white wine is fascinating with that.
In fact, you can obtain some sweet wine by drying or late harvesting. But if you had a regular harvest, you obtain a dry white wine.
Wow. And what is the... Because we have to finish up, but if you were to sum up the terroir and what makes Cella specific for our guests, what makes it so unique and delicious?
Well, probably the main characteristic giving by Cella terroir into the wine is the freshness, the minerality, some spicy. All the wines have some characteristic that way, and all the wine can age it very well.
Yeah, and the mark of all really great wines, the ageability, the minerality in reds and whites, and that freshness, that good acidity that makes it food worthy, and then certainly a distinctiveness which your wines have, that have a personality so unique and so specific to one place. Few other wines have that so strongly. It is such a pleasure to have you on In the Drink, and please keep up the good work. We'll always be proud to have your wines at our restaurants.
Thank you, I promise.
Thank you, Ivan, so much. I wanted to thank once again Nicole Heyman from Soil Air and
thank
the whole
you.
Team at Soil Air for organizing this. And of course, our fearless producer and engineer, Jack and Jory. Thank you guys for putting this together every week. You guys are the best. And of course, thanks you guys for listening. This has been In the Drink on heritageradionetwork.org.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.